I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Google vaping and you'll get a host of web pages designed to inform you of the potential risks of using e-cigarettes. Five vaping facts you need to know. Vaping, what you need to know for parents. Vaping, the way you smoke an e-cigarette could make it even more dangerous. But those headlines and articles are up against a whole host of other societal and social messages, especially for teenagers. Things like, vaping is safer than smoking, or check out these Juul pods in strawberry milk, grape, and cappuccino flavors. In the last couple of weeks, alarm has risen among health officials, parents, and vape aficionados, including young people, some of whom were under the misconception that vaping is, by definition, harmless or non-addictive. Around the country, a spate of respiratory illnesses and a handful of deaths have been reported that appear to be tied to the use of these e-cigarettes. In Vermont, four cases of such illnesses have been or are being investigated. This isn't the same kind of lung disease or cancers found in long-term smokers. State epidemiologist Patsy Kelso says they're seeing previously healthy young adults with a history of vaping for weeks or months develop a clinical syndrome over a few days. So what is going on, and what should people who use these products know about the potential health risks? What should parents know when they talk to their teenagers about this? We are joined now by Patsy Kelso to help answer your questions, and by Sarah Cosgrove, a respiratory therapist and tobacco treatment specialist at Rutland Regional Medical Center. Sarah Cosgrove and Patsy Kelso, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I think we're looking at something like 450 cases around the country that are being investigated people who have illnesses that may be associated with vaping, and a handful of deaths. Patsy Kelso, what's going on? Why now?
The bottom line is we just don't know. CDC has changed its methods. They're updating their website once a week now. They've changed the national number to 380 confirmed and probable cases. They're no longer reporting cases that are just under investigation. And in Vermont, we've had reports of 11 possible cases. We've sort of ruled out five of those and called them not a case, but we have five that we're still working on investigating to determine whether they meet the case definition, and we have one confirmed case in Vermont.
What is the case definition?
The case definition is from the CDC, and the goal with that is so that all states are reporting the same thing when they say we have a case. It's pretty detailed, but it includes a history of vaping in the 90 days prior to illness onset, as well as specific X-ray or CT findings, ruling out infectious diseases as a cause, and some other clinical indications.
Sarah Cosgrove, what do you think about that question of why now? I mean, vaping products have been around for a while, but as far as I know, the first reported illnesses of this particular sort of grouping of illnesses was in August. So do you have a sense of what's happening?
Well, I think just the amount of people that are using these products right now, too, definitely factors in. To be honest, I was a bit surprised it happened as quick as it did. So I just think it's really the amount of people using these products is what it comes down to.
When you say you're surprised that it happened as quick as it did, meaning you thought there would be illnesses, but what, it would take longer to develop?
Oh, definitely. I definitely there would be some respiratory illnesses. I mean, a lot of these products are oil-based. And you think about the perfusion through the lungs, you know, that's not really going to pass into the bloodstream and such. So, you know, when we're thinking, usually we need about 15 years to definitively say, you know, this causes this. So in my presentations I was doing up to this point, I'm like, we still need a few more years to really definitively say, you know, vaping contributes to these illnesses. And it just rolled so fast this summer. I was a bit surprised with these recent deaths and the acuity of the illness associated.
These illnesses are different than what you might associate with somebody who's a long-term smoker, who's getting other kinds of lung disease or lung cancer or other smoking-related illnesses. Sarah Cosgrove, for you first, can you explain the differences?
Well, when we're talking about, think tobacco smoke with the combustible lighting cigarettes, we see a lot of COPD further down the line. The chronic bronchitis, emphysema, asthmatic symptoms and bronchospasms. What's being reported with these vaping illnesses is not similar to what we would see with the long-term damage with combustible cigarettes.
So, Patsy Kelso, what can you tell us about the Vermont cases that you've been looking into? And I know, obviously, there are HIPAA regulations, but are there similarities? Are there, you know, ages of the people? Are we looking at young people, older people?
We're looking, like we are nationally, at people across the age spectrum, those younger than 18 as well as 18 and older. I can't give you individual details about any particular case, but, you know, we're seeing in our interviews of patients and in the medical chart reviews that we're doing to determine if cases meet the definition of this illness, we're seeing similar things to what they're seeing nationwide as far as use of different products, clinical presentation, that sort of thing.
One of the things that we've been reading about lately is something called vitamin E acetate that's being investigated as a potential suspect in these illnesses. What is that and how is it used in vaping products?
There are a few labs, including a federal FDA lab, as well as the New York State Public Health Lab in Albany, and a few others that are testing some of the products that are submitted voluntarily by people confirmed to have these illnesses. What the FDA lab and the New York lab have found is that the majority, if not all, of the liquids that contain THC products also contains some amount of vitamin E acetate, which is an oil used in cosmetics and other products. But they're using it in these THC liquids as a cutting agent to dilute the THC. And the one of the challenges is there's no way to know when you buy a product, whether it's from a store or more likely from, you know, an off-market person who just maybe sells it out of their home. That
why isn't there a way to know? I mean, aren't they're often packaged in, you know, very products that tell you who the company is?
They're packaged, but there's no way to really know what's in them. Whether, you know, what the concentration of nicotine or THC is, what else is mixed in there. These things aren't regulated by FDA, and so they're not tested for quality or quantity.
We're talking about vaping today, and we're learning a little bit about illnesses that are being associated with vaping and being investigated as potentially being associated with people who've been using vape products, e-cigarettes. Juul is a common brand name for the products that you may have heard about. And listeners, if you have a question or you want to share your own experience, we'd love to hear it. You can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org, or you can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Jill is calling in from East Dorset. Hi, Jill. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What are you talking about today?
Well, I am the owner of three stores, Vermont Hemp Pharmacy in both Manchester and Bennington, Vermont, A Kind Place in Bennington, Vermont, which I opened 20 years ago this past July, and Greener Pastures, which I opened up just 3 years ago. Both of those stores are contemporary tobacco accessory shops, as we used to call them. They look a lot more like head shops these days, with the approval of or the legalization of cannabis use. But I, on September 6th, opted to pull all vaping products from my shelves because of this concern. And I have the community response has been astounding, and I feel thankful for that. The industry response has been pretty negative. I'm getting definitely a lot of people who are quite angry, saying that I am perpetuating rumors. And really, my only argument back has been, we don't know what is making people sick. We just don't know. We think it might be vitamin E acetate, but we don't know. And like your guest had said, while I do require something that's called a COA, a certificate of analysis, tells you everything that's in a product, I dread saying this, there is rumor inside of the industry that even COAs are being altered or fudged. We don't know that either. But I just found myself saying, we just don't know. And the prudent thing to do is to pull all products.
Well, Jill, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you sharing what you're doing and what you're thinking about. And it's interesting to hear the response that you're getting, both from potential customers and people in your communities, but also from within the industry. I really appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Parker, who's calling in from Hanover. Parker, hi. Go right ahead.
Hi there. So I started vaping about 2 years ago, right when I started college, because it was the new fad. And there was nothing wrong with it until about a year ago, I started developing this severe nausea and lack of appetite to the point where I don't even eat for 3 days. And I think it might be caused by the vaping. Have you heard of these symptoms before?
Parker, before we hand you over to Sarah Cosgrove for an answer, what are you using? What kind of products are you using?
So I started off using the Juul, which is, you know, the biggest competitor on the market right now. And then about a month ago, I switched to a smaller product called the Enjoy.
And do you use flavors?
Yes, they are the flavored pods, not the refillables, but the ones that you buy pre-filled.
Parker, thanks for sharing that. So Sarah Cosgrove, what do you think? I mean, Parker's experiencing nausea, loss of appetite. Could it be related to vaping?
Most definitely. So nicotine is an appetite suppressant. So anytime you go more than 1 day without eating, I would definitely contact your primary care just to have this conversation and make sure that, you know, you're healthy otherwise. But nicotine is a natural appetite suppressant. And you think, like a lot of people that try quitting smoking cigarettes and their concern is that they'd gain weight. Well, yeah, how they've kept it off to that point is that nicotine actually speeds up that metabolism. So another side effect, I would say, of too much nicotine, because we know that each one of these pods contains as much nicotine as a pack or a pack and a half of cigarettes. So that is a large amount of nicotine people are getting. And when people start getting more nicotine than their body can handle, it's almost a toxicity. And how we know that's happening is because of the nausea, headaches, irritability. So I would just definitely keep track of the amount you're using of these nicotine products, and I would contact your primary care just to make sure that every other way you're still healthy.
Parker,
does that help?
Yeah, Parker, is quitting something that's of interest to you? I mean, where are you on this spectrum of how you want to see your vaping use?
I would love to quit. When I started this, I thought I was above getting addicted to it. No one is above getting addicted to it. It is severely addicting. And I've tried multiple times to stop, trying to throw it away, and yet time and time again, I come back to it. Are there any suggestions you can recommend to cease using them?
Parker, oh, thanks definitely. Again. Yeah, Sarah, go ahead.
Well, you're over in New Hampshire, you said, correct?
Hanover, yeah.
Hanover. Okay. There's a great, any of the tobacco cessation programs offered in Vermont or New Hampshire are definitely going to deal with nicotine addiction. So they'll gladly take you into those programs. I know there's a great one at Dartmouth Hitchcock program there, which is definitely worth reaching out to. They have national quit lines as well. But one of the first places that I start working with people is to really use nicotine replacement products like a patch, a nicotine gum, or lozenge, and using them properly. So say like a nicotine gum, being able to chew it several chews, and really it is seven chews, and tuck it in your cheek. And that actually helps with that nicotine addiction. Because what I'm seeing, and I'm sure you can relate to it, is when people stop using these e-cigarettes, because of that high nicotine level they're getting, the withdrawal symptoms can be very uncomfortable. So being able to get a nicotine replacement product to at least ease those withdrawal symptoms and any support you can get out there, you know, in saying it to people, because this is a nicotine addiction, much like smoking cigarettes.
Sarah, is it true? So I was talking with a pediatrician friend casually yesterday, and she was saying that there are teenagers coming into her practice kind of panicking because they've been hearing about this, and they're saying, I think I'm sick, and they're not. But then also, is it true that you can't prescribe nicotine patches or gum to people who are under the legal age? I mean, can you provide smoking cessation tools, medication, to people who are below the legal age for smoking or for buying e-cigarettes?
When you're working with your primary care provider, yes. because in a few situations, we've come across kids that are coming in with exercise-induced asthma, and now they can't even do their football training. So we have the conversation, slowly pull out of them, you know, that they've been vaping, and we start addressing that piece of it. And the pediatricians have been very on board to try to treat this as much as possible. So we've provided patches and gums, but it is the counseling piece of it, you know, to talk about why are you using this, you know, what's going on. And, you know, offering replacement pieces. A lot of the kids are telling me it helps with their stress and anxiety, which is really sad that they're already starting to put a, you know, a drug, nicotine's a drug, in the place to try to self-medicate themselves. So we do, we try to get, try to really dig out what's going on, when are you using it, to put those practical pieces. But doctors are really trying to get ahead of this a little bit more and opening the door to possibly using nicotine replacement products.
Let's go to Sarah, who's calling in from Springfield. Hi, Sarah. Go right ahead, Sarah.
So I just wanted to mention back when the doctor was speaking about e-juices and being unregulated and that you don't really know what is in them. That's just not true. I am almost 40 years old, mom of three. I've been vaping almost 10 years. Any reputable store or website can provide you with third-party independent lab testing purity reports of your vape juice. You know exactly what is in there, and you know exactly what is not in there. And I've been doing this almost 10 years, and I have never been sick. And this is just ridiculous. It is highly regulated, and that is why they do that. They have to do that, and they're very successful.
Sarah, let me ask you, what are you looking for or trying to avoid when you're looking at the ingredients in your juices?
So naturally, I want to avoid anything that I can't pronounce or that looks harmful to me, any type of chemicals, and none of my juices have these chemicals in it. It is 98% natural ingredients that we find in all of our everyday foods, makeups. There's nothing wrong with my vape juice, and it is highly regulated, actually.
All right, so Sarah, let me put this to Patsy Kelso, because you say it's highly regulated. You're looking at third-party verification. So, Patsy Kelso, first of all, can you explain, when you say it's not regulated and Sarah says it is, you may be talking about two totally different things. So what are you talking about?
I'm talking about having the FDA review these products and regulate them so that there's required testing and quality control. So they're not regulated by FDA. The producers may, in fact, be doing testing.
And so, you know, Sarah says, look, I know what's in my juices. I know what I'm getting. I'm not getting chemicals, and it's not dangerous, so stop fear-mongering. So what's your response?
We would say the health department and the CDC would say that while some people choose to use e-cigarettes as a way to quit smoking, they haven't been shown to be effective as a quit smoking tool. In future years, in fact, that may be the case, but it's not right now.
But that doesn't sound like the reason why Sarah's using it to begin with.
Correct. I think the challenge with the current situation is we just don't know what's going on. People have been vaping for many years, and what we're seeing is something pretty new. The first cases across the country were reported in April or May, and you know we're up to 380 confirmed and probable cases at this point. So we think there's something new happening, but we honestly don't know what it is, and we don't know if there's one particular ingredient or product or device or liquid that's causing the problem. We are seeing nationally that 80% of the cases are occurring among people who report using THC liquids as opposed to nicotine liquids. But there are about 20% of the cases who report using nicotine liquids.
And Sarah Cosgrove, what would you say?
You know, when I personally look into the information and the ingredients that are in those products, you will see that some of the oil bases, especially when we're looking at vitamin E, yeah, you can use it topically, but or ingest it as in swallowing, but it very clearly says that it's not meant to be inhaled. So you have to think of it in those regards that the lungs don't handle oils passing through them. So I guess that is a piece that I want to add to it, is that these products may be FDA approved for topical to be used in makeups and stuff. They may be flavoring and chapsticks, but they are not meant to be breathed into your lungs.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Sarah Cosgrove is a respiratory therapist and tobacco treatment specialist at Rutland Regional Medical Center. Patsy Kelso is Vermont's state epidemiologist. They're answering questions and sharing what's known about the risks surrounding vaping and why the concern is on the rise after a spate of illnesses and even fatalities related to vaping has caught national attention. And let's go to Keith in Westford. Hi, Keith.
I'm just really disappointed that VPR is covering this, but your own experts on the show, at least 80% of these injuries come from people using illegal THC products, and the media and VPR has really blurred the lines with discussing, is my Juul vape product that I buy from a convenience store safe, where it seems like all of the data is pointing out that what's unsafe is buying THC vape juice off Instagram illegally from an unknown source. And I just think this is a big kowtow to big tobacco. And what we're seeing here is a knee-jerk reaction of smoking THC from who knows where may get you sick, so we need to ban all vape products. And where's the journalism?
Keith, so what you're angry about or frustrated with is that you think that somebody, including the media, wants to ban e-cigarettes, when what you're seeing and hearing about is illegal products that you think are leading to illness. Do I have you right?
States. We've already seen states ban e-cigarettes. I personally don't vape. I just see this as a huge distraction and a great excuse for pearl clutching from the kids these days are doing this thing that is definitely healthier than smoking, but we need to ban it. Well, we won't talk about cigarettes because that's perfectly fine and acceptable and has been legal for who knows how long. So all the freaking out with vaping, I can go buy a pack of Marlboro Reds right now if I want to. Where's that?
Yeah, well, first of all, Keith, you can also go buy some vape products. That's still totally legal. And I would definitely push back a little bit on the idea that we're not talking about other things or that this isn't journalism. People are getting sick, and state health officials, national health officials are trying to figure out why we're seeing vaping on the rise, especially among young people. I think it's a totally valid story journalistically. But Patsy Kelso, what about, you know, Keith is saying, look, you've just said most of the people who have been found to have gotten ill were getting ill from THC products, which in many states, at least if you're buying them commercially, are illegal. So is this just sort of a reach around?
As I said, and, you know, as we've been discussing, about 80% of the cases nationally report only using liquids containing THC. So we're acknowledging that. But we also need to acknowledge that at the national level, we don't know precisely what's causing these illnesses. There's not one specific liquid or product or ingredient that we're able to tie yet to these illnesses. So the investigation is ongoing. With the numbers of cases that have been reported and all the detailed information we're collecting from those cases about the products they use and how they use them, we think we'll get the answer. We just don't have it yet, though. So we can't say that it's THC or it's vitamin E acetate or it's any other ingredient. Hopefully we'll get there soon. I think we also need to recognize that there are two pretty separate issues here. There's the severe pulmonary illness associated with vaping, which is, you know, the investigation that we're doing to try and figure out what the cause is. And then there's the sort of separate issue of young adults using vaping products. You know, they're concurrent and they're related, but when we start talking about banning flavors and things like that, that gets more to the issue of young people who may not have ever smoked being addicted to nicotine or putting their health at risk by using vaping products.
So, Sarah Cosgrove, Keith has one perspective. We got another note from Jill in Montpelier who says, we need to stop teenagers from starting this habit. Now that Michigan has banned flavored vape products and New York State is expected to follow course, what is our political strategy to encourage Governor Scott or the legislature to do the same? So, you know, Keith says, this is an overstep, and Jill is saying we need to ban flavored e-cigarettes. So where do you come in on this as somebody who's in, sort of working with a population of people who are dealing with this very issue?
Okay, so I'm in the schools a lot, and I have a lot of contact with youth. And what we're seeing in the schools is when I go into classrooms, I talk to teachers, the teachers will say, to be honest with you, I know 75% of this class is using. And the amount of times the administration has to go and patrol the bathrooms or kids are using in class, I mean, it really is alarming at the amount. I mean, they've gone as far as putting aerosol detectors in the stalls in the restrooms because other kids are going in and they're saying that they can't use the bathroom because of the amount of people using these products. So in the schools right now, I mean, we've definitely hit epidemic proportions of people using. And that's why we're trying to shift towards prevention. And I receive a tobacco control grant, which is also tobacco as in cigarettes, chew use, and vaping. So we're kind of combined them all together under one grant, and that is to focus on kids 12 to 20 years old that the nicotine is adversely affecting. We know that nicotine has an effect on the youth brain that, you know, predisposes them for depression, you know, affects their prefrontal cortex where that decision-making occurs and stuff. So we're really trying to focus on the messaging of prevention. And at Rutland Regional, we put together a resource center under the webpage BeSmartDon'tStartVermont.org. And we're trying to collect as much information there as kind of a resource housing center for parents coming in that need more resources to how to talk to your kids about this. For educators, resources to use in the school. So we're trying to collect as much information as possible to get that prevention effort going because we're seeing the amount of kids affected that never smoked. And these are high nicotine, you know, amounts of nicotine that's going to affect the youth brain different than it's going to affect the adult brain.
So, Patsy Kelso, from the state's perspective, you know, Michigan has banned flavors. New York is indicating it might. President Trump has said that he's interested in banning nationally flavored e-cigarettes. Is that something the state of Vermont would like to see? And is banning e-cigarettes altogether something that you'd like to see?
Our message is that people shouldn't vape until, you know, while this epidemic is going on, and until we figure out what the cause is, people shouldn't vape. The question of young adults and youth having access to these products, I think, is, you know, a different issue. I haven't spoken with our policy folks, and that would fall more under the tobacco program. My staff and me are focused on is investigating these outbreaks and, you know, trying to learn what we can about the cause.
Sarah Cosgrove, is vaping safer than smoking or not? Because, you know, I've heard we get mixed messages on this.
I'm going to say no. I really am, because it comes to the table with its own issues. Quite honestly, I don't believe it is. But we know the consequences of combustible light-up cigarettes. We can definitively say it causes this, this, and this. We still don't know with vaping, and that's that piece. But from what I'm seeing, it is not a smoking cessation device. You know, it's not candy, as still some parents think, and it's not water vapor. So there's still a lot of misconceptions out there that we have to correct. And I run across very educated people every day that still don't know, and it sounds silly, that it's not water vapor and that there's nicotine in these products. So I think we still have to do more messaging to get out there to say, you know, safer than cigarettes? Well, cigarettes are pretty bad, and they contribute to over 480,000 deaths a year here in the United States. We don't know with e-cigarettes where this is going.
And if we find out 10 or 20 years from now what the long-term health effects of vaping are, and I'm talking about vaping regular nicotine now.
Yeah.
If we find out what those health effects are, and if we know that vaping is safer than smoking, safer doesn't mean safe.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let's go to Paul in Thetford. Paul, hi. What are you thinking about today?
Hi there. So I'm calling because I became aware of the cartridges that have like THC in them a couple of years back. And once all of this panic started happening, I looked into a little bit, and it really only took a few minutes of research to find out that a huge amount of the market is flooded with basically counterfeits and fakes. Mm-hmm. So they'll have packaging on them, and it looks really legit. Sometimes they're actually names of brands that are, you know, real medical dispensaries or whatever, but they're actually not. And in these cases, we really just don't know what's going into them. And lab tests that I've found online have shown some pretty scary things in there. So,
yeah. So, Paul, you're worried about counterfeit products. What exactly is a counterfeit product when it comes to vaping, Patsy Kelso?
Well, with nicotine e-liquids, those, I think, you know, those are typically sold through brick-and-mortar stores. I think the concern now is more with the THC-containing liquids because those are not legal in most states, and so their production is questionable, and you don't really know, as the caller said, you don't really know what's in there. You don't know how much of the cutting agent, whether it's vitamin E acetate or something else, you don't know how much of that is in there, so it's concerning.
So, Sarah Cosgrove, you know, you said that you encounter people, young people and parents every day who don't quite know what's actually in their juices or who are a little bit unclear on what's going on with this. So what should people who are listening, maybe parents who know they need to talk to their teenagers about this or maybe have teenagers who are using, or young people themselves, or, you know, anybody, but specifically for young people where this use is on the rise and often these misconceptions are most closely held, what should people know to have these conversations?
Well, I think it's the consistent messaging, too, and having the conversation with the kids. Ask them what they know. If a parent sees, you know, they're walking down the street with their kid and they see someone using an e-cigarette, be like, hey, what do you know about this? And to start the conversation with the kid, because they're exposed to a lot more than what we realize they're exposed to. So have that conversation with the kids. If you see the advertising, ask the kids what they know about it. And then learn as much as you can as parents. As once again, you know, I want to drive everyone back to resources. And the Be Smart, Don't Start Vermont.org, we're trying to collect as much information out there that it's in one place so educators, parents can come forth and be properly educated to have that conversation with their kids and answer their kids' questions.
Sarah Cosgrove is a respiratory therapist and tobacco treatment specialist at Rutland Regional Medical Center. Sarah, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And Patsy Kelso is Vermont state epidemiologist, and we'll keep you posted on what's happening with the investigations in Vermont into vaping-related illnesses. Patsy Kelso, thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome.